Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our weekly look at the technology world from a blind or partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. We'd love to hear from you as always. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about a new eye implant that has had incredible results at a recent trial. Hal Davies has been finding out why Welsh-speaking screen reader users are in high demand. And we'll be hearing more about the new updates and changes in Apple's iOS 26. That's all coming up this week. We've got a full house again this week in terms of co-hosts, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Let's see what's been going on this week. Hubert, what have you got?
Short one from me, but something interesting nevertheless. So we've spoken about InnerSearch, or to InnerSearch rather, quite a few times, and about them too. They have now released an app for their shopping platform, which I've now downloaded. I've not used it much. I've kind of opened it and signed up for it. It kind of looks like a bit of an app slash mixture with the web interface at the moment, from what I can gather, but I don't know why. I'm very relieved that they have an app. I'm someone that these days, I will use websites if I have to, but for some reason I really prefer using apps for most things rather than web browsing.
I don't know what it is. I'm the same. I just find an app is nicer most of the time, even if it's one of these that's just a wrapper around the website, which, yeah, I think this is in the first, like, for this first iteration. I've not used it yet, but I've heard that's pretty much what it is, and they're working on kind of simplifying it a bit. But I don't know. There's just something about going to an app that feels nicer.
There's just less clutter on an app than it is if you're trying to navigate a website, because it just seems to be that the website is full of junk and clutter and advertising, sponsored links, and cookies, of course, all this cookie stuff. And I think that's why an app is a lot more streamlined and tidier to navigate, especially if you're on your phone.
I'm the same. I remember saying that to somebody years ago, that I generally, if an app's available, I will go to the app first. And I think the clutter is a really good point, but I also think apps, because there's so many of them now, there's a bit of a standard layout. I mean, obviously each app would argue it's unique, but there's certain things you can expect, like a sort of toolbar along the bottom, perhaps settings or your profile in the top left, that kind of thing. So there's a bit of familiarity as well, maybe.
Well, while we're on the topic of InnerSearch, actually, I'll do kind of mine next, because one of the other things they've launched, which I'm really excited about, is InnerSearch stores. So this is something that allows you to, a little bit like these services that are out there to host your own kind of shops, you know, like Shopify and WooCommerce and things like that. This is done through InnerSearch, so you can open your own store, you can call it whatever you want, and you can sell whatever products you might want to sell, basically, whether it be services or something you've made or something you want to resell, whatever you want. And InnerSearch will take care of all the hosting and the website and the inventory management and all that. Obviously, you've got to give them your inventory first. But they can do all this for you, which I think is, again, it's just really nice. It's nice to be able to do that in an accessible way. I mean, these platforms are accessible, but they're, you know, visual first, whereas this is kind of the opposite, where this is specifically designed for use by blind people.
And I think it's brilliant. There's certainly people I know who, you know, sell assistive technology, for example. If they could utilize that platform, then it'll make things a lot easier for them, certainly. And another kind of way of reaching customers. And at the end of the day, you can't get enough of ways to reach customers with your products. The more ways, the better.
That's really interesting, Callum, because I've thought for years, literally years, about being able to sell the jewellery that I make online. But I've always bumped up against the kind of obvious thing of photos aren't my strong point.
Yeah.
And photos are quite essential when selling, especially something like that, something that is very visual. But also then just the case of, even if I were to take photos and write up descriptions and do all that, would I be able to do it on a platform that was accessible, plus all the usual, standard things that other people have to consider of cost, etc., just to be on the platform. And then even if you find one that works, there's no guarantee that they won't update it and break it.
Yeah.
So that's quite exciting, actually.
And this is the thing that always used to worry me because my wife used to have her own business. Well, it was kind of both of us running it, but it was her business. She used to have a business selling Braille greeting cards. And obviously, the good thing with her is she is sighted. So, yeah, although I was doing a lot of the technical stuff, she was sighted and she knew how to use the platform and everything. So, if something did break, I had her to help me out. But I can't think of anything worse than something breaking and having to get in touch with customers. It's just not a good look to say, oh, I'm really sorry. Your order's going to be delayed because I'm struggling with the accessibility of the platform. I mean, I'm sure customers would be sympathetic, but it's definitely not what you want.
No.
So there you go. Check that out. Innersearch.ai forward slash stores is where you can see the stores that are currently on there. There's a few that they've launched with. And you can contact them if you want to get started with that, and they can help you get set up on there. Jackie, anything caught your eye this week?
Well, on the tech toy table at the moment, I'm loaning a multi-line display, and this one is called the DotPad X. Remember, we recently spoke to Dave Williams on the show about DotPad X. So I'm actually playing with one at the moment, and I have finally been able to log in. There is an app which accompanies DotPad X, and it's called Dot Canvas. And this is where you can pair it with your phone or your iPad and draw in it. Now, this is, I suppose, in some ways similar to the Monarch and the Wingit app, which allows you to draw, and anything you draw on your iPad or iPhone goes over to these devices, and you can actually then feel the tactile drawing that you've created. So I'm actually playing with this at the moment, just evaluating it, and just, they are really interesting devices. I am completely hooked on these multi-line displays, not just for the diagrams and all the stuff that you can do and feel under your fingers, but also the fact that you have multi lines of Braille as well. And on the DotPad X, because it is working well with VoiceOver, it gives you so many options. I opened a Kindle book and was able to read that on the DotPad X, the multi lines of Braille. And I just think that while we are still probably in the early days of multi-line Braille, it is, I mean, the advantages of having it are huge. And obviously we've talked about them before, but if they could get the price down and make them more affordable and accessible to more people, it really is a game changer. And I'm really enjoying making a comparison of the two at the moment, which you'll probably hear in future issues of the program, because I'd like to make a comparison, certainly of DotPad X versus Monarch. And it, there are other ones coming along as well. So I think it is a really, really exciting time for Braille and multi-line Braille technology.
Yeah, so exciting. I got hands-on with the Kenu console recently as well. I know we spoke to them
Yeah.
a few weeks ago. And I did get to try out the just the device in general. I got to try out that kind of is it one quart thing they've got? The sports thing. That was pretty cool. And as well as just the way it could display spreadsheets and tables and things in multi-line. Honestly, I'm loving this. I really can't wait. I keep saying it, but I just can't wait to see what's going to come of this when it does eventually get a bit more, more developed, I guess. Natalie, has anything that caught your attention this week?
Bit of a boring week for me. I'm not quite as exciting getting to play with the dot pad or explore the other stuff you guys have been talking about, but I did notice an announcement from Humanware that said they were going to be releasing I think it's an application called My First Note Taker on the 1st of November. So that should have gone live at the weekends. And I think the sort of principle behind it is aimed at sort of younger children primarily, who are maybe learning Braille and how to read and write at the same time. So children who are visually impaired at sort of primary one or reception year stage, depending where you are in the country. And I thought that's an interesting concept because actually we talk a lot, not necessarily on this show, but in general, about the sort of lack of provision or the inconsistency in support up and down the country at various stages, various schools. It really is luck of the draw, how much help you get or how useful that help actually is. And I'd never really thought about it at all in the sense of what happens if you don't get your basic support right from the off? What if you don't have somebody there to teach you Braille or to help you get familiar with techniques and things? So actually, if a school or a council is able to buy, it was on the Braille Note Touch Plus, I think they said, if they're going to give you that anyway to be able to do your schoolwork going forward, that might actually help, or at least help perhaps maybe parents sort of help teach their children at home, if they're not Braillists themselves, be able to help their child learn and progress just in the same way that sighted parents would with a sighted child learning to read and write. So it's a small thing, but I thought it was an interesting concept that I'd completely overlooked.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. I mean, that's the challenge, isn't it? I mean, my mum learnt Braille when I was younger, so she knows bits. She knows grade one, but then the funding that was funding her Braille course was cut, so she never was able to learn grade two, which was, it was fine. I managed to get there with just kind of self-taught and being taught through school and stuff. But that is a massive challenge for parents. If they don't learn Braille, or they don't have the ability to learn Braille, then it's really hard to keep up that learning.
I think it's fair to say that a lot of people are quite negative about children learning Braille because they think that audio and JAWS and screen readers is the holy grail. And actually, there is no substitute in my view anyway for actually a child learning Braille. And it's one of the things I'll always be grateful for special education for because we all learnt Braille. Different people had differing degrees of experience with it, and some people didn't take to it as well as others. I certainly embraced it, and I loved it from the get-go. And I was very lucky to have a good education with Braille in that sense, and also to touch type. But these days, a lot of kids they're discouraged from learning Braille. You don't really need to learn it. If you've got a little bit of sight, you'll be all right with the screen reader. I'm sorry, but no, that wouldn't be my path.
Yeah, I do think that's a bit of a myth that seems to be going around, and I really don't understand the logic behind it. Because if you said to a sighted child, "Oh, don't worry, you don't need to learn how to spell anymore because we've got tech for spell check,"
Exactly.
it doesn't work like that.
No.
But I do think, I mean, if somebody later on in life decides, I hate Braille and I want to use it, I'm much happier with audio, then that's absolutely fine, that's up to them. But at least give them the tools and the knowledge to then make their own decisions later on, rather than making that choice for them.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, very interesting. A bit of a busy week on the show this week. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
News now here on RNIB Connect Radio of the results of a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that showed how the use of a pioneering eye device has been able to restore some reading vision to people with the condition geographic atrophy with dry age-related macular degeneration. The results of the study also showed that 84% of participants were able to read letters, numbers and words using prosthetic vision through an eye that previously lost its sight. Mahi Mukit, Senior Vitreoretinal Consultant at Moorfields Eye Hospital and the Institute of Ophthalmology at University College London, who led the UK arm of the clinical trial, joins me now to explain more about the results of the study and the technology too. Hello Mahi, and thanks for joining me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hi Toby, great to join you.
Firstly, Mahi, do explain to me and listeners exactly what the condition geographic atrophy with dry age-related macular degeneration is and how the condition affects someone's vision.
So this condition is one of the most common eye conditions that leads to sight loss across the world. There's two forms, a wet form and a dry form. And geographic atrophy affects up to 250,000 people currently in the UK. As I'm sure your listeners are aware, that the retina is the light-seeing part of the eye, and the central part is called the macula. And that allows people to see centrally and able to carry out all their functional reading and visual tasks. And in this condition, the very center of the macula gradually melts away and degenerates, and the light-sensitive cells called photoreceptors disappear. And that eventually leads to severe sight loss and then blindness. It usually affects both eyes, can be asymmetrical, which means it can affect either eye at different times in someone's life, but that is the actual condition.
And the study showed how the new pioneering electronic eye implant, along with a pair of glasses with a camera connected to a small computer, would send pulses of light through the tiny chip that was inserted into the patient's retina down their optic nerve to their brain, with their brain turning those pulses of light into the shape and image of words and letters. This all sounds a little bit sci-fi to me, so Mahi, please do explain how it all works and how the brain is able to turn those pulses of light into those letters and words.
Yeah, I mean, you've really done quite a good summary of it there. The device is a 2x2mm microchip, which is completely wireless. It's a bit like a SIM card in your phone. And once that is implanted under the center of the macula, where the area has the atrophy and no photoreceptors, that chip essentially works like an electronic photoreceptor. The chip itself has 378 pixels, and each pixel is something called a photovoltaic cell. So if you imagine a solar panel, that's a photovoltaic cell. So it's very light sensitive. So the whole platform is stimulated by light. So the spectacles that the patient wears has a video camera, as you say, which captures a visual scene. That then gets projected onto the chip, which starts to be stimulated. And this is all instantaneous. So signals are moving back and forth all the time. So the signals from the chip then go back to the glasses, which are linked to a video processor. Within the processor, a stimulation is captured by the video camera, starts to get processed. The brain is capturing these signals all the time. And how it works is that within the actual retina and the macula, the patients still have inner retina. So you have inner, outer retina. So the chip sits in the outer part of the retina. So the signals from the chip then travel up the inner retinal cells, travel down towards the optic nerve and to the visual cortex, the visual stimulation part of the brain. So this is all instantaneous. So it's all working as soon as the glasses come on. And initially what the patients would see would be some flashing lights. So they would start to see stimulation. So when you look at the visual world, you'd start to see flashes, which are called phosphenes. But as the retinal cells start working in synchrony with the chip, the signals start to become more refined and more defined, and the software starts to remove all the noise from these light stimulations. And as the patients start looking at different objects, the objects start to be refined. So I'll take the example from the study where once the patients have orientated themselves during the rehabilitation training and know how to use the device and understand what they see, they can then start to be presented with things such as letters within words. And those letters are then projected, as I said, from the goggles to the chip. And eventually what we found is that this chip is able to actually resolve the letters and numbers. So the patients are actually able to see what we see. And it's actually all to do with how Daniel Palanker's team in Stanford developed this particular chip. It has very good alignment within the retina. So when it sits within the retina and connects to the cells above it, each pixel, so each photovoltaic cell, when it gets stimulated, those signals are actually quite focused. So the patients don't have to scan their eye around. The cells in the remaining retina start to pick up the signals, and they're not getting too confused. So that's one of the reasons, one of the technical reasons why this particular device actually works so well. And the brain starts to compute these images. And that's essentially how this particular device is able to give patients back meaningful vision rather than what's gone before.
And there's some wonderful quotes in the press release from Sheila, a patient here in the UK who has had the new sort of electronic eye implant inserted. And with the glasses and the technology using AI, she was able to, after a bit of time, almost start to learn to read again. Is it sort of, I suppose, similar to how someone is able to, after a pretty serious accident, use their brain to, in a way, start to use their legs again and that kind of sort of thing?
Yeah, I mean, what it is once you lose the photoreceptors inside the macula, that part in the middle of the retina stops functioning. So in a way, yeah, it's kind of paralyzed. It doesn't function because there's nothing capturing the light. So that's why the very central part of someone's vision is completely blurred. And that's why they become legally blind. They have their peripheral vision, which again is very, very blurry, but the large part of the central vision is non-functional. So yeah, I mean, as patients regain motion and movement after paralysis, which is a more gradual process, this is a more kind of more rapid activity within the actual retina, because the cells start firing up again and start reconnecting with this electronic photoreceptor. So it's a similar way, but yeah.
And obviously, this is a clinical trial of the technology using patients across the world with some really impressive results, too, in maybe just a small number of people. But there are some fantastic sort of impressive results. And I suppose, what's next for this technology? Is it a case of more testing before it could be rolled out to more people with geographic atrophy, with dry age-related macular degeneration?
Yeah, so this particular trial, as I said, was carried out over multiple countries, multiple hospital sites and multiple surgeons, and it's called a pivotal trial. So medical device trials, they term it a pivotal trial. It's a bit like something called a phase three trial. So when you're doing drug trials, when you get to phase three, that's when you can then demonstrate whether something is working and then goes to approval. So although the patient numbers aren't particularly high, they're enough to satisfy the regulatory agencies around the world that this trial with this number of patients has demonstrated benefit. So the trial itself will now move on to the regulatory submissions, which are ongoing, called CE marking. So medical devices need to have CE marking. And once that approval goes ahead, it would then go to different countries and their healthcare agencies to start seeking approvals to be made available to patients within their health systems. So that would be the NHS in England, such as NICE, NHS England. So yeah, no, this is the next stage. It will be starting to be rolled out over the next couple of years across multiple countries, because the trial has demonstrated that it does work with a good safety profile. So yeah, that is the next step.
So patients with the condition could at some stage in a very near future be having this technology as well.
Absolutely. I mean, there isn't any current therapy. Patients that are blinded from geographic atrophy and dry age-related macular degeneration, there isn't any current therapy that can restore vision. So it's a huge unmet need. And obviously patients who are potentially eligible would be screened and checked for eligibility for this particular device in their healthcare.
And Mahi, could this type of technology by implanting a chip into the retina help people with other eye conditions where there has been damage to the retina in their eyes?
Absolutely. I mean, this was the very first condition that was tested, but certainly another huge area which the company I know are looking at and starting trials on are genetic eye conditions such as retinitis pigmentosa, and many other conditions associated with retinal degeneration, and also things like Stargardt's disease, which when you look at the eye, it looks very similar to geographic atrophy because the very center of the eye is degenerated. And these conditions, importantly, affect a much younger population. So they sadly become blind at a much younger age. But certainly that is an area that has been currently and actively explored. So we would all hope that that would be another indication for a retinal device such as Prima in the future.
And obviously, we must underline that this is obviously early stages of the technology. But if listeners would like to follow the progress of the technology and maybe take part in future clinical trials, where would be the best place for them to go to find out more? And would it be maybe better for them to, I suppose, discuss things with their consultant ophthalmologist as well?
Yeah, I mean, the actual company, which is based in San Francisco, Science Corporation, have actually started a patient registry. So they are taking details of patients who are potentially interested in this technology, and that's available through their website. So yeah, and I mean, their own consultants could obviously contact myself directly for any further information, which has been going on for a number of years now. I have received colleagues contacting me about updates, so I can certainly give them an update as to the progress of Prima for a range of conditions.
You will find out more information about this new pioneering technology by visiting Moorfields Eye Hospital website, which is moorfields.nhs.uk, and on the homepage is an article all about the pioneering new technology, and within that article is a link to register for Moorfields Research Portal, where you will find out more information about the technology and the potential to take part in future clinical trials and to find out whether this technology might be good for your eye condition. Well, thank you very much indeed, Mahi, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me all about the European clinical trial of the use of this new electronic eye implant that has seen some fantastic results so far.
Thank you very much, Toby. Thank you to all your listeners for taking the time.
RNIB Cumbria giving Welsh-speaking screen reader users the opportunity to shape how the language is being used in screen reading software. Here's Howell Davies with more.
RNIB are on the hunt for Welsh-speaking screen reader users. Here to tell us why is RNIB External Engagement Coordinator Hannah Rowlett. Hannah, croes an all. Welcome back to RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks so much. Great to be here.
Well, take us back to the beginning on this one, Hannah, because not everyone uses them in their day-to-day lives. What is a screen reader? And what can it be used for?
A screen reader is a piece of assistive technology software that can read aloud what's on your screen. So it does what it says on the tin. It's a screen reader. It reads what's on the screen. So it can read out kind of anything from your kind of the menu items on your computer, to your emails, to a web page, to what's online. And as a user, you control your screen reader usually by using your keyboard, if it's on a laptop or a PC, where you can use it to navigate around the screen. So you don't need to rely on your mouse anymore. If your vision has deteriorated to a level where it's maybe difficult to make out what's on the screen, that's where the screen reader can step in. We also can have screen readers on smart devices, so things like iPads and smartphones, and we can then control the screen reader using our fingers. And as we touch the screen, different gestures move the screen reader aloud. And anything the screen reader focuses on is voiced. So instead of having to rely on our vision, we're now kind of using our hearing to kind of discern information from the screen.
And what's the situation like now for Welsh language speakers? Is there good availability of the language with this type of software at the moment?
No, to be truthful. In Wales, we have a real emphasis on Welsh being equal to English. For example, all of our public services are delivered through the medium of English and Welsh, and we have legislation that means that Welsh cannot be kind of treated on a non-equal basis or equal footing to English. However, that's just not the case for Welsh-speaking blind and partially sighted people. We really don't have parity between Welsh language screen readers and English language screen readers. So there are a couple of options. They're just not brilliant. And that means that kind of Welsh speaking, blind and partially sighted people are all compromised on what digital Welsh language content they can access. We here at RNIB have access to free licenses for Geraint and Gwyneth, so Welsh language voices, male and female, but these voices only work on Windows. So if you are using JAWS or MVDA, you can come to us and request free licenses to use. But that doesn't help if you're somebody who uses a smartphone or tablet. Maybe all your family are Welsh speaking and you communicate over messages or emails through Welsh. If you're blind and partially sighted, you know, and a Welsh speaker, you can't do that on a smartphone or tablet through the medium of Welsh. So we're in kind of a really sort of poor situation, if you like, for our Welsh speaking blind and partially sighted peers.
And RNIB are looking for volunteers to join a lived experience panel. What does that involve?
Absolutely. So Welsh Government are kind of really have really stepped up and are looking to take this forward, want to create a Welsh language screen reader voice that really meets the needs of blind and partially sighted people. So the technology that does exist in the past has been created by people who aren't blind or partially sighted. And I'm really keen that this time round, when Welsh Government are looking at developing something new, we're involving people with lived experience in that development. So I'm looking for Welsh-speaking, blind and partially sighted people who use screen readers to volunteer their time to join a panel to give their lived experience on what it's like to access or use Welsh through the medium of a screen reader so that they can actually provide feedback about the technology as it's being developed to ensure that when it's ready, when we have the finished product able to use, it is actually something good and it's something that people can use to access all the material in the Welsh language that they want to.
And you mentioned the Welsh Government there. Is it common for governments to get involved in technology like this and the application of language and technology?
In this case, because we are Welsh is a minority language, Welsh Government have many kind of schemes to improve and increase the numbers of Welsh speakers to protect our language and make sure that for the future there are more Welsh speakers. And so because of that, because they're so invested in saving and supporting the language, they have a particular department whose focus is on Welsh language technology development. There isn't, generally speaking, even in kind of like the mainstream world, there isn't that much Welsh language technology. There are some, but it's just unfortunately Welsh is kind of not yet seen on that level, and that's something Welsh Government are looking to change for the future, which means that lots of their energy is spent on supporting this work. And it's great that they are willing to kind of work with us and that they see the value in creating something really great for blind and partially sighted people to be involved in the kind of Welsh-speaking future of Wales.
And in terms of joining the Lived Experience panel, what are the requirements? You need to be a Welsh language speaker, of course, and a screen reader user. Are there any other requirements to take part?
Absolutely not. That's it. Just those two. And in terms of being a Welsh speaker, we're looking for people at kind of all levels of learning Welsh. So it might be that you are somebody who is first language Welsh, and that's your kind of native language and the language that you live most of your life through. It could be that you're a Welsh learner and you're at the start of your journey to learning Welsh, or maybe somebody who grew up speaking lots of Welsh and is maybe like a lapsed user. We see that quite often when people move away from kind of their homeland. They still wish to speak Welsh, but maybe they've lost a little bit of confidence. And the fact that there isn't really the Welsh language technology to enable somebody to continue accessing Welsh. Maybe you're somebody who wants to, you know, would like to pick that up again, and the technology would support you to do that. We're looking for people at kind of all levels. And similarly with screen reader, you don't have to be massively proficient at using a screen reader or fully or very confident. It just has to be something you use, something that you use on a kind of day-to-day basis to be able to provide good feedback.
And the panel itself, is that an ongoing sign up? Is that something where this will take place over a number of weeks or a number of sessions, or will it be a one-off conversation that's had?
Yeah, it's really an ongoing project. So as you know, with kind of the development of any kind of technology, it does take a little bit of time. So there are going to be lots of opportunities, not only over the coming months, but probably the coming years, for people to get involved, to provide their kind of lived experience. Or at the moment, we're at the beginning stages. We're at the foothills of the mountain, but we haven't yet climbed it. And so there's going to be many stops along the way for people to get involved. So they can dip in and dip out as we go through the project. Just really keen to get a kind of representative group of people who are looking to be involved in the development of the technology over the course of the next few years, really.
Well, how could people find out a bit more information about the Lived Experience panel and sign up to take part?
We have information up on our RNIB website in the volunteering section. There is a volunteering role that is to do with Welsh language technology. So you can find out all about the role there. Or you can email us at cymru@rnib.org.uk if you'd like to learn more.
Well, we look forward to hearing more from the Lived Experience panel in the future. But for now, RNIB External Engagement Coordinator Hannah Rowlett, diolch yn fawr iawn I chi. Thanks very much for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Diolch iawn.
Let's continue our look at some of the new features and changes in iOS 26. And the one that I'm going to cover this week is not so much an accessibility thing. Well, it's not an accessibility thing at all, really. But there has been a bit of a makeover to the phone app in this version. And obviously, some of these interface changes can be a bit tricky to get your head around, especially when you chuck using a screen reader into the mix. And we mentioned this on our kind of intro tech radar piece, as we call it, a few weeks ago, that it can be a little bit confusing. So I thought I'd just show you how this works and hopefully help you get to grips with it a little bit. I actually quite like this new layout, to be completely honest, now that I've got used to it. But yeah, it can take some getting used to. So let's jump into the phone app.
Phone, one new item. Phone, back button.
So the first thing you'll probably notice is that the tabs along the bottom are different. So before, on the old layout, we had favourites, recents, contacts, keypad, and then voicemail. That's been trimmed back a little bit. So let's see what we've got. Start from the bottom left.
Calls, tab, one of four.
We've got calls.
Selected, contacts, tab, 2 of 4. Keypad, tab, 3 of 4. Search, tab, 4 of 4.
So, contacts and keypad are the same, but favourites and voicemail have gone. And the voicemail tab, I guess, so the last one has been replaced with a search tab. So the calls tab is where you'll see the most difference. So let's jump into that. I'm on contacts at the minute, but let's go to calls.
Calls, tab, 1 of 4. Selected, calls, tab, 1 of edit, button.
Now, if you've got favourites saved, if you've got favourite contacts saved, they will be at the very top of this screen. I don't have any favourite contacts. Not because I don't have favourite people, but I don't know why. I've never really used the favourites section. But if you do have some, then they will be kind of pinned to the top of this screen from what I can work out. So first thing you've got is an edit button where you can customize your kind of name and photo and sharing settings. I think you can also select multiple items in here as well if you want to manage things in bulk. But I'll carry on flicking to the right and we'll see what we've got.
Calls, heading, filter, button, unread Callum Stoneman. Missed call, 9:24 p.m. Hello, this is O'Callum. Leaving a voicemail for all myself. Which is a...
Now that's a voicemail. And I'm going to come back to this. So that's a voicemail transcript that it gives you. But it says missed call first. And then starts reading that little kind of transcript that it's got. But if we go down...
Unread Callum Stoneman. Missed call, 9:24 p.m. Voicemail, button.
There's another entry. So it's got that entry twice. There is only one voicemail and one missed call there, but it's got it twice. One of them just saying voicemail and then one with the transcript. But of course, initially it says missed call and then P voicemail. I don't know where the P comes from. But obviously, normally you would have the missed calls in kind of one part, and then you would have the voicemail tab would say one new item, and you can go in there and see the voicemail, but now they're kind of merged. So I'll come back to that and I'll show you how to access it and how to make that easier. But if I carry on flicking to the right, we'll see some of the other calls that I've had come in and out.
Callum Stoneman, Miss Jess, outgoing FaceTime audio, 740, button. Jess, outgoing phone, two calls, 739, button. 0333777 8903. Incoming United Kingdom, yesterday, button. Plus 4412045.
So that's pretty standard, like you would have in the recents. You've got all the calls that were that I've had that were coming in and out. Obviously, some of them are outgoing, some of them are incoming. One of them there is missed. What's kind of interesting, what is new, is I'm on one of the numbers that has called me. If I flick down using the actions rotor, we've got a few options here.
Call.
So the first one is call. If you were to just double tap this, by the way, without flicking down, you would go into more details about that particular number or about that particular contact, and you can view the call history and everything. So double tapping now doesn't immediately call them like it used to, although you can change that in settings. So the first option on this one is call.
Bin.
We got bin, so we can delete that.
Remind me in 1 hour. Remind me tonight. Remind me tomorrow. Remind me later.
And there's some options there, so you can select to be reminded when to call someone. And this will just go into the Reminders app. So remind me later will allow you to pick a custom time and date when you want to be reminded. And if you do remind me in an hour or remind me tonight, I can't remember what time the tonight is classed as, but it's kind of predefined. And obviously, remind me in an hour would be 1 hour from now. And all you do is just double tap that. They go into the Apple Reminders app, so you can go into Reminders and you can see it there. And it will, of course, notify you when that reminder is due as well. So very handy, because I can't tell you the number of times I've missed a call from someone because I've been busy and then just totally forgot to ring them back. So you can easily set reminders there. If you want to make this screen a little bit easier to navigate, if you know that you've got a missed call or you know that you've got a voicemail, but this feels a little bit too cluttered, you can filter it. So you may have noticed there was that filter button at the top. If we go back to that.
Edit, but calls, heading, filter, button.
Now we've got a few options on here.
Classic, button. Selected, unified, button.
We've got classic and unified. I'll come onto those in a minute.
Selected, calls, button.
That's for all your calls.
Missed, button.
That will show you just your missed calls.
Voicemails, two, button. Manage filtering, button. Dismiss context menu, button.
And then that's where you've got your voicemails. And then you've got a couple of options in there as well for manage filtering, which is basically a shortcut to the phone app settings. And again, I'll talk you through that in a second as well. So if we go back up to missed.
Manage voicemails, missed, button. Missed. Edit, button.
You'll see now.
Missed, heading.
You'll see now that this list has been trimmed down massively. So if we carry on flicking.
Selected. Unread Callum Stoneman. Missed call. 924. P. Hello, this is a Callum. Unread Callum Stoneman. Missed call. 924. P. Voicemail.
So you've got the two entries from me there, the missed call and the voicemail transcript that it's got. And it does say voicemail at the end of that as well.
Selected. Calls. Tab. 1 of 4.
So there you go. You can see that list has been narrowed down to just those missed calls. And obviously, if I had more missed calls in there, then they would show up. So if it's just a missed call, then it tends to be just one entry. Even if they've called you a couple of times, it will just say two calls or three calls or whatever, and you can double tap on that, and you will get the call history, so you can see what time they've called you. If it's a voicemail, then it tends to be two entries, which is a little bit weird. It tends to be the entry of the missed call and voicemail itself, and then you'll see the transcript. And we can double tap on either of these to actually play the voicemail. So if I go back up to one of these entries.
Unread Callum Stoneman. Missed call.
Now if we double tap.
iPhone the 31st of October, 2025, at 9:24.
So that tells me the call and when the voicemail was left. But we're actually on the voicemail screen now, which is where we can play it. So if I carry on flicking to the right.
0. 0. Adjustable. 0. 13.
So that tells me that it's a 13-second voicemail.
Share button. Rewind to beginning. But play button. Audio root vocaster BT button. Delete button. Transcript. Hello, this is O'Callum, leaving a voicemail for all myself. Selected calls tab 1 of.
So there you've got your usual options there. You can rewind, or you can play, or you can select the audio output. So if you're using a headset, or if you want it to come through your phone speaker, you can select that. And then underneath all of that, you've got the transcript. Now, for some reason, the quality of that voicemail has come through pretty terrible. I rang myself from my work laptop and just left myself a voicemail, and the quality has turned out dreadful. So I'm not going to play it, but you could see there where all the controls were, and you could see where the play button was. And obviously, if you double tap that, it will just play as normal. You're really not missing anything exciting. I basically just said, hello, I'm leaving a voicemail for myself, which is a bit weird, but, you know, it's just to show you how it works. So that's how you can filter the screen down. And obviously you saw the voicemail option in there as well. So if you just wanted to see voicemails, then that's how you can do that. So it's fairly similar to what we've already got in a lot of ways. So for example, recents is all of your recent calls, whether they were incoming or outgoing or voicemails. And then before, you had the little missed tab at the top that you could select, and that would filter it down by your missed calls. And then you had voicemail, which was a separate tab. And that would, of course, just show you your voicemail. It's pretty similar, but it's just combined them into the one tab at the bottom of the screen, and then you can filter them using that filter button at the top. And of course, the favourites tab has gone as well, so your favourite contacts will be at the top of that recents list before your list of calls. If you don't like this new layout, you can change it, you can put it back to how it was. So if we go again to the top of this screen.
Edit button.
We've got the edit button. If we go to filter.
Calls, heading, filter, button. Classic, button.
And we've got these two options at the top, classic and unified, which I mentioned earlier. Now at the minute, unified is selected.
Selected, unified, button.
But if we go to classic.
Classic, button. Edit, button.
And now it's changed it. So let's see what we've got across the bottom of the screen.
Favorites, tab, 1 of 6. Selected, calls, tab, 2 of 6. Contacts, tab, 3 of 6. Keypad, tab, 4 of 6. Voicemail, tab, 5 of 6. Voicemail, tab, 5 of 6.
Ah, beautiful. Just how it used to be. And it does say 6 tabs there. I'm not really sure why, because you have only got 5. So again, another little voiceover quirk there at the time of this recording. But if we go to the top of this screen, we're on calls as we were before. But if we look at the top.
Edit button, selected, all button, 1 of 2, missed button, 2 of 2.
You've got your all and you've got your missed section, so you can just filter it. Again, exactly how it used to work. And what happens on this screen as well, what's also changed, is in the previous phone app, you could just go to a recent entry and double tap it and it would call them straight away. That is what happens in this screen as well. So it's also changed that behaviour to how it used to be. You do also still have the reminder options. So if I go to one of these entries.
Yes. Outgoing FaceTime audio, 740, button.
So there's a FaceTime audio call that I made to Jess. And if I was to just double tap, it would call her straight away. But if we swipe down...
More info.
More info is how you can get to the call history.
Bin. Remind me in 1 hour. Remind me tonight. Remind me tomorrow.
And that's where you've got all these reminder options. So the options are still there, but it's just... If you're on the classic view, then it works the way that it used to, in that double tapping straight away would call them. So if you wanted to view more details or view the call history, you would just have to flick down to that more info button. Whereas on the unified layout, it's just the other way around. So you would double tap to get to the more info screen, or you'd do a flick down to get to the option to call that particular contact. So that's the new layout and how you can change it back if you're not too keen. There are also some options in the settings. So you can go to settings and then apps and then phone to get to this, but that managed filtering option will give you a little shortcut. So let's go to it using that.
Search, search field, filter, button. Selected, classic, button. Dismiss, manage filtering, button. Manage filtering. Settings, apps, back button.
So now we're in settings, and there's a couple of options in here for call screening, which if you're like me and you get a lot of spam phone calls, you'll quite like this. I'm going to navigate by headings through this screen because that's the easiest way to get to it.
Phone, heading, allow phone to access calls, heading, screen unknown callers, heading.
Screen unknown callers. Now this is what we want to look at here. So we've got three options here.
Never. Calls from unsaved numbers will ring, and missed calls will be displayed on the recents list.
So that basically means that if it's a call that it doesn't recognise, it will just treat it as normal.
Ask reason for calling. Calls from unsaved numbers will be asked for more information before iPhone rings. Calling and data rates may apply.
So that's the second option.
Silence. Calls from unsaved numbers will be silenced, sent to voicemail and displayed on the recents list. Calling and data rates may apply.
So this option has actually been around for a while, but before it was under the name of silence unknown callers. And what it would basically do is, if it's a call that it doesn't recognise, so if it's not a saved contact, or it's not in your recents, or it's not someone that you've communicated before. So for example, other apps can contribute to this. So if it's a number that you've never called before, but you have messaged, then that would be classed as a known number. Or if it's someone you've been chatting with over email and they've got a number in their signature, then it would see it as known. But if it's a number that it just has never seen before, then the silence option will just send it straight to your voicemail. And of course, they have an opportunity to leave a voicemail there, but you wouldn't know they rang unless you kind of checked the spam section in the filtering, or if they left you a voicemail. The option that I prefer is the middle one, the ask reason for calling, because for me, the silence option has always felt too aggressive. There might be genuine reasons why an unknown number needs to call you. So this is the option that I prefer.
Ask reason for calling. Calls from unsaved numbers will be asked for more information before iPhone rings. Calling and data rates may apply.
Now, this is pretty cool. So if someone rings you who it doesn't recognise, the call will be answered by your Siri voice. So it will speak in your Siri voice and it will say, please state your name and reason for calling, and I'll see if this person is available. And it gives you a few seconds to kind of say, hello, my name is John, I'm calling from your energy supplier, whatever it might be. And then it will put the call through, it will ring, and you will see the number, and you'll also see a little transcript of what they have said. So then you can decide from looking at that whether it's a call that you want to answer or not. And this has saved me quite a few times now from getting spam calls, because what happens a lot of the time is either they will hear that please state your name and reason for calling and they will hang up, in which case you will still see it as a missed call, but it won't actually ring. You will just see it appear in the phone app and it will show it as a screened call that was missed. Or if it's a bot that calls you, which can sometimes happen, then that's really amusing, because all they see is that the call has been answered. So it will say the please state your name and reason for calling, but then of course the bot just carries on talking. So you can end up with something like, I had it the other day where it was one of those calls where it says, you know, hello, we are calling from HMRC, there has been tax fraud on your account, you must press 1 to speak to us immediately or the police will be on their way, you know, those sorts of calls. And it just said that straight into the please state your name and reason for calling, and I could see that straight away and just go, yeah, whatever. And that's a long-winded way of saying it saved me from a lot of spam calls, which is why I'm showing you this, because it is worth knowing about. Now, you may have noticed that it doesn't actually tell you which one is selected. And again, that's another voiceover bug here. So if I double tap on the option that I want to select, which is the ask reason for calling.
Selected. Ask reason for calling. Calls from unsafe.
It does tell you there that it's selected, but if we go back and review these options.
Never. Calls from unsafe. Ask reason for calling. Call. Silence. Calls from.
It doesn't tell you again which one is selected. So when you double tap on one of these, it does select it, but it just doesn't tell you as you scroll through which option is set. So the best bet, if you're not sure, is just double tap again on the option that you want. Again, hopefully this is something that's going to be fixed. But at the time of this recording on iOS 26.0.1, it doesn't announce it. Screen recognition may help here. It may tell you which one is selected. That's worked for me a couple of times. So if you want to be certain of which one is selected, then just double tap on the one that you want. If it's already selected, then that's fine. It will just keep it selected. But if you want to double check, then screen recognition may be your friend there. So in summary, we've got a new setting for handling unknown callers, which I really like. And in terms of the layout, if you are in the unified view and you select just the default filtering, which is calls, that will give you your favorite contacts at the top. Then all the calls that were incoming, outgoing, or voicemails. If you go to filtering and select either missed or voicemails, then it will just show you those relevant calls. And if you don't like that and you want to change it back to how it was, just click on filtering and select classic, and that will give you the phone app that you're used to, the good old way that it used to be before. And if you want to switch back to the new layout, just go to filtering again and select unified. And that's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for listening. If you want to get in contact with us, if you like what you've heard, or if you've got anything you want to share or any questions that we might be able to help you out with, techtalk@rnib.org.uk is that all-important email address. Written messages are always welcome, or you can attach a voice note as well. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown, and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.